climate connection.
And I absolutely like your the theme of this whole undertaking, because just I think a few days before I read an article about how quickly the ice is melting in the north. I'm a geographer myself, so I said nothing is surprising. That's been, you know, this has been continually kind of reported. I also work as a translator, and I translate articles, geography articles, academic papers from Polish to English, and a lot of them is just like, yeah, climate change, how is it visible in the data? So, but at the same time, I think that there needs to be a kind of a translation of this academic things, ideas, vocabulary, language, data into teacher's language or general society language.
I think that's one of the challenges often that English language teachers face, is that they can be expected to do everything.
That's true.
And so, and I think certainly in my experience, English language teachers are more willing than most other types of teachers to do those things, but they need that help, support, knowledge, information to do that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you are making, because I went to ISFL conference here in the UK in Liverpool in 2013, and I remember being listening to a talk about how English teachers are expected to save the world, and we just teach English, so I think language teachers, specifically English teachers, have really kind of an easier task than other language teachers or other teachers in general, because as a subject teacher, I'm bound by the curriculum, and I can find my, space here or there, but I've got the curriculum to cover.
Do you think English language teachers, though, can be constrained by other factors, non-curricular factors, things like, there's an expectation about what you will do if you are good at English, and the kind of the landscape of examinations like IELTS and so on about what English should be?
I'm quite sure there are expectations like, there are exams coming, and these are the topics we need to cover. But at the same time, I think a course book can be a little bit of, can be an element that limits the language teacher. And I remember teaching in the olden days where we didn't have too many materials, and oh boy, it was so tough to kind of create your own test and thing, how you are going to teach about St. Valentine's Day or any other stuff like this, creating your own materials. But then with the development of the materials, I remember thinking, oh gosh, I've got teacher's book, student's book, I've got CDs, DVDs, online material, 2 pages packed with content. How am I going to go through this material? And it's expected from the language school I'm working at that I cover this course book during a school year. Where is the space for my, let's do something about St. Patrick's Day, because that's the time of the year. There is no space for that.
There's no space to respond to those big themes as well. Like you say, there's the local things, the things that happen on a daily basis. But then what about all these other issues going on in society?
Absolutely. One of the things I like about CLIL, Content and Language Integrated Learning, is that it allows a little bit, at least, to connect the curricula of other subjects with the curriculum of the language or what is happening in the language classroom. Because if you look at it, you know, as a geography teacher, I can cooperate with a history teacher, with a biology teacher, chemistry, mathematics. I can find links. We can work on projects together. Where is the language that, in this kind of undertaking? The language curriculum is, or whatever is offered by the course book, the specific course books teachers are covering, it's completely not related. So clear could be this kind of a bridge between the other subject curricula, the language, and this could give opportunities to kind of go into the wider world.
How do you see CLIL in the kind of modern age? Do you see it growing in popularity? Because I think what I see is that if schools are thinking in that way or institutions are thinking in that way, they'll often just go for an English as a medium of instruction approach where the content is delivered in English, but it doesn't really necessarily link to the language aspect as well as a CLIL approach might.
Actually, these are sometimes academic discussions, you know, the difference between this and that and how many CLIL varieties you can have. But actually what CLIL can offer is kind of a more methodological approach and support to the teacher. I've been in different classrooms listening or observing lessons, and very often it was what you say, a class in English, but it just was like English medium instruction class. Whereas in CLIL, we kind of deconstruct the lesson and say, okay, how do we support the student in the vocabulary? How do we support thinking? How do we make sure that the input is guided? How do we make sure that the students have got time and space for rehearsing the language and rehearsing the content? So I would say, I may not be very popular saying this, but I would say that CLIL could be kind of methodological support for any undertaking that combines language and content. And for example, EMI teachers could actually benefit from looking at CLIL methodology. I was involved with some projects, here in Poland, where we train language teachers, subject teachers who want to deliver their subjects through English. And some of them work in IB schools, International Baccalaureate. And even this institution has observed that, oh boy, our teachers are not necessarily native teachers. Okay. Our students are second language learners. So we have to shift from EMI, like, okay, this is in English, deal with it, into how we support our students. But CLIL can also give a lot of support to teachers who teach in their native language, but they have immigrant students who struggle with the language of instruction. So I suppose a lot of teachers and a lot of contexts could actually benefit from looking at CLIL methodology.
Okay, so just the purpose
is to paint my star.
I've got a cat here, and then she can, she can make a little bit of a mess when she starts walking around.
A guest appearance later on. Okay. On that note, where we were talking about the sort of the potential added responsibilities for teachers, or at least the perception of added responsibilities for teachers. In 2019, in your IATEFL plenary talk, you asked the question, am I qualified to teach about gases, volcanoes, or chemical bonds? I'm wondering if you could give an answer to a teacher who is thinking about that question.
Yes, chemistry can be a little bit frightening, but it's I'm just saying this from the perspective of a non-expert. But actually, what can be really exciting about so-called soft CLIL or content-based teaching, you know, or enhanced content language teaching, is that I'm not bound by the curriculum of a subject. I have to take care of the language, but I can find my own ways how to do it. If I'm into chemistry and I can deliver a lesson or a project that is that works around chemistry, fantastic. But if not, how about going into mathematics or art or music or geography, biology? There is so much choice. So one thing, it could be the teacher's decision. Oh, yes, I'm really into physics. I'm going to try and teach a little bit of physics and deliver it in my English classroom in English to my students so that they could see that English is for this kind of learning and teaching as well. Or maybe my school is doing some bilingual projects and there is a biology teacher who is teaching biology in English, but I can support her. Okay, she can tell me, or he can tell me, oh, we are doing a life cycle of a frog. Or we are doing, I'm just now thinking, you know, what kind of topic biology can cover, like human body. Okay, can you help me with the language? That would be also fantastic. So on one hand, this freedom may be frightening, but at the same time, it can be really exciting.
And that collaboration between teachers across disciplines can be very empowering as well.
Yes, and actually hearing stories from teachers in different countries, there is really a lot to do about that. This is what very often teachers report, saying, yeah, I'm kind of on my own doing this. I would like to have someone to talk to.
I mean, and again, on that, Alexandra, if teachers, for example, are struggling to work with colleagues or perhaps an institution, it's not against CLIL, but it doesn't really think it's their sort of main business. If we're thinking about the climate crisis, could you perhaps talk a little bit about either project-based learning or task-based learning and how that could potentially be used in an English language classroom about issues related to the climate crisis?
Actually, this is a really interesting moment. We are talking about that because, as I said, there is a bit of snow here in Northern England. There is a lot of snow back in Poland. And I just got a message from my friend and colleague, an English teacher, at the same time. So low temperatures below zero, minus 20, so much snow. Where is this climate? You know, what's going on? Are we really talking about warming, global warming? Is it global warming? Minus 20. So there is a lot to be done in those terms. And actually, what I would be thinking about is going beyond just informing. Because if teachers follow a course book in English, there is, I guess, every course book now, or more course books than not, contain material about climate change and all these kind of issues. But this is just informing students. I would like English teachers to try and go beyond informing, going into changing students' attitudes,
So you think sometimes those materials are too descriptive and you want to adopt, to say, a more critical pedagogic approach to those
materials? That would be Yeah, they are descriptive. I suppose they have to be like this because this is, for example, a course book can be used by different teachers in different contexts. But I would urge teachers to kind of take this content and, you know, go one step further. Okay, yeah, there is this text about a tropical rainforest being cut cut down at a terrible speed. What do we do about that? Can we do anything about that? Maybe we can have a project connected with this topic, but the project that is going to lead from this informing through changing attitudes to teaching specific skills and then taking action. Because we can find links between what is going on in the tropical rainforest in the Amazon in South America with what is going on in my backyard. Are there any trees cut down because they are constructing a new road in my area? Or I just yesterday I read a brilliant article about a man who stopped the desertification process in Sahel by employing traditional, very old techniques. So we can find kind of parallel issues in our local area. And of course, we talk about going from local to global or from global to local, but do we actually do anything? So taking action would be brilliant, and actually, project-based learning is about that, taking action.
And I say that, like you say, that mixture of the global and local, you know, if we can take that sort of that glocalism, that sort of a word which I think is becoming more and more commonly used, whereby our students can learn about these issues from all over the world and then directly apply it in their own situation. I mean, I guess I'm thinking, you know, we could do projects based on things like food miles, for example, or understanding where your clothes come from, and these sorts of issues, which are quite straightforward in a classroom, but so much language could come out of that.
Absolutely. And actually, one of the ideas for language teachers would be, as you say, take the content that you normally teach, like about clothes or about food, but take this one step further and go into those food miles or check where your clothes come from, what goes into your jeans, how many t-shirts or tops have you got, do you need that many, what happens if you are done with it. Maybe at the end of this whole process, because it's not only in project-based learning, it's not about a product as such, it is also about a process. But maybe at the end of this process, we could have a whole school clothes exchange day or week or a space where you can have, okay, this is the space where everyone can bring his or her clothes that they no longer wear. Everyone and anyone is free to take them. Or maybe we can donate those clothes to local people who are in need or something like that. But then, of course, there is this language issue. There is so much materials now in English that just it would be a shame not to, you know, not to use that. This is an English language teacher's advantage over other languages, that there is so much material that you can take and adapt, of course, but it's there.
I mean, what you're saying is that in this process, the teacher has to be quite confident, would you not say? They have to be quite a confident teacher to go beyond the textbook, to engage with their students on these issues, and to sort of almost give them students the opportunity to turn into social activists. So it relies quite a lot on the teacher's own values and beliefs and sort of skills.
That's really true. And actually, I have realized that with the development of the number of different materials coming with a course book, it's not that teachers don't find time and space to introduce something new, but they kind of may lose the ability of actually going beyond the course book. Oh, it's I'm doing the course book. I'm following the material. No need for anything else. But yes, it takes a little bit of encouragement. It takes a little bit of courage. But I think teachers are those people who really are there because they believe that they can have some impact. And this impact can come in different forms. It can, of course, come in form of the language I'm teaching. But the language is never can never be separated from the content. So now I can offer you some really exciting content that is going to teach you life skills, that is going to teach you social skills, that is going to show you the bigger picture. Like at one political decision in a very distant country can have a huge impact on my local area. And it happened in, I think it was 2019 when China banned imports of waste from European countries, from abroad generally. What this has got to do with me in Poland, in Central Europe? It occurred that the waste that couldn't be sent to China had to find its way to other places across the continent. And what happened in Poland were fires deliberately set
set ablaze the fire. They deliberately burnt the waste.
The waste in designated areas.
Yeah.
Across the whole country, and it's not just like, okay, it's a hot summer, this is an accident. There were reports that it's deliberate. Why? Because waste from, I don't even want to name the countries, because one of them was the UK, and I'm in the UK now. But you know, what do we do? Oh, we've got space for your waste here in Poland. And one of those fires was in my city. And I'm like, okay, this shows me and my students, if I talk about that, how we are interconnected and interrelated.
So you raise an interesting point there, Alexandra, because you're saying, oh, I'm not sure whether I should say where it's from. And this, but surely we should be doing that in the classroom. That is exactly where we should be discussing those issues. I was just going to see on that note, because I was going to read to you a quotation which I think you made in a recent presentation, quoting Alan Maley about this, where he said that one of the roles of a teacher is to help students think about, quote, globalization, exploitation, confrontation, incarceration, discrimination, degradation, subjugation, how inequality brings poverty, how intolerance brings violence, how need is denied by greed. Now, obviously,
no comments.
A very provocative statement, and I'm sure many teachers, English language teachers, would agree with much of what he says there. But I suppose my question would be, to what extent are parents agreeing with that? To what extent are institutional managers agreeing with that? To what extent are government education ministers agreeing with those ideas? So how do you see that relationship?
Yeah, this is a tricky topic, because you know, on one hand, I do understand why language course books have to be a little bit whitewashed, topics that are controversial have to be removed, because you can have parents disagreeing with that, or school authorities disagreeing with that, or sometimes it comes with the teacher's contract. you are not allowed to talk about politics, or you are not allowed to talk about this or that topic. So I suppose a lot would depend on the teacher's personality and how the teacher approaches this topic, those topics, because there are many of them, and the rapport with the students, that, you know, those kind of areas or topics can be safely discussed. But I would very often, I would encourage teachers to talk to someone about them, just to be on the safe side, saying, for example, look, I want to do this project that is based or that talks about water in our area, and we know it's not really okay, so it's a potential minefield, but it's an issue that everyone can see, and I want to talk about that. I want to have a project. I want my students to maybe have some impact. So if we reason correctly, properly, we can achieve something like that. But it's not easy. It's not an easy thing.
And I guess we could also potentially make the link as well to something like we can also make the link, for example, to something like ecotourism, where if students do develop their English language skills sufficiently, they can move into industries like that, which in the future may well be a growth industry to work in, but which also has a positive impact on the environment.
That's true, but I was thinking about other jobs that where you can link the English language speaking with a profession. For example, so-called green industries, like green energy, before we develop in this direction, before we go into ecotourism, there has to be something that we can work around. Our environment needs to be, preserved well enough for ecotourism to develop. And we need to have local, for example, green energy supply if we want this kind of connection. So it's just an endless, probably if we look into it, it's an endless list of different jobs and occupations.
Which we could all say would all require, would all benefit from having good English language skills, but also some of those good core skills that you were mentioning before, sort of the collaboration, cooperation, critical thinking, digital literacies, research, organisation, leadership, all of those things come through CLEAR-Law, project-based learning.
This is a brilliant list of skills, actually. I'm quite sure that teachers are very much aware that they are no longer those who know. They are no longer the source of information as such. I don't need a teacher to get some information. I need a teacher to help me filter this information, because there is so much everywhere. I need guidance, you know, which data or statistics is reliable and what we do with that later on, but not information as such. And it can be a painful process for teachers also to realize, oh, I'm no longer the one who knows. Or I'm sorry, my cat is just moving. She's just moving herself.
Chris has got a cat as well, so we just need his for the hat trick of.
She's managed. She just has her own life and.
This is going out live, Alexandra. I forgot to say.
I understand. She's in.
Okay.
what I would be offering or suggesting to language teachers is to take a topic that is relatively safe, but also a big global issue. We talk a lot about climate change, and of course people mess two different terms. What is climate? What is the weather? They are not the same. But there are two other big issues equally important and interconnected. And the second one would be plastic waste. And the next one would be water. And it's so much, everything's so much interconnected. But if you, as a language teacher, think about water as a central theme, you can offer the students a lot of choices. Okay, let's look at water from the perspective of mathematics. And we can talk about liters and this kind of thing, measuring water. How about looking at water from the physics perspective? How about, oh gosh, I'm not a physics expert. and chemistry. And, you know, you can actually link the entire school curriculum. This could be a big school theme. Let's have a water week, for example. And of course, if you offer a project like this, students have a choice. Students do all those things that you say, research skills and presenting and language, of course. But you will very quickly see that you cannot do anything like that without going into environment, going into climate change, going into political conflicts about water. Syrian conflict is described as one that has the drought as the background theme. And it's not just 1 year drought. It was, you know, a year after year after year. And it ended up with what we have now in Syria. So you take this topic that seems, oh, okay, innocent, but actually the further you go, the more clearly you see that this is something that affects everyone. It's a social issue, it's an economical issue, it's a political issue, it's a financial issue. And this could be a brilliant way of actually bringing the whole curriculum together, but also looking at a local area, looking at a global area, looking at this theme globally. And this could be a brilliant idea. I would love to hear from teachers who say, yes, we took your water suggestion and we turned it into a water week in our school and everyone was talking about water for a whole week.
I mean, what you're suggesting is very interesting, but it's obviously very different to the way that the English language industry works nowadays, where you find most course books have separate discrete units about, you know, the environment, and then it's about culture, and then it's about technology or whatever it may be, all sort of quite neatly parceled into those different sections, whether that's a government textbook or internationally produced course books or whatever it may be. How do you see that shift happening, that paradigm shift happening from, say, what we have now to moving more towards a thematic curriculum?
That's a very interesting question, because it reminds me of, again, Liverpool 2013, when I came to Liverpool ISFL conference for the first time, and I prepared a proposal for a course book that would be built around those eco topics: water, food production, clothes production. And you know what? Nobody was interested. And I'm talking about publishers, like English course books publishers. I was not surprised, a little bit disappointed. But hey, in 2019, I'm in Liverpool again. And one thing I talk about, clear and environmental issues. And you talk about the publication where you took this poem from, which is a language teacher's take on sustainable development goals, United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. This is a free publication that offers lessons built around all those sustainable development goals. So I see this shift already from, oh yeah, this is just a chapter, or maybe even not, because like 20 years ago, you know, not even all course books would have environmental issues even mentioned. And this shift has already started with the materials being produced, with the EFL world acknowledging that, hey, we should be doing a little bit more in this area. I think we need to have really strong-willed decision makers to say, hey, we know you are experienced language teachers. We set this curriculum, but we also want you to have the freedom of venturing into those areas, like talking about environmental issues, and then following with actions, you know, because there is a lot to gain from that.
And creating that sort of upward pressure from both students and teachers onto government education ministries, onto publishers and so on and so on.
Actually, I can see already a lot of pressure from societies connected with the local issues. Like in my city in Torun, they are building new roads and putting new tram lines, and they cut down trees along this building site. There was such an uproar, you know, from people in the town. They're like, hey, you are removing those trees, you know, what are you going to replace them with? You know, how are you going to design this tram stop? It's going to be between two busy roads. How about some vegetation? So there is pressure from local societies on local governments to kind of deal with that. We feel the heat waves. We know, we understand how cities work, operate in summer. It's not rocket science. It's been talked about in science for years. Now it's coming into people's minds, and it's, you know, now it needs to be better translated into the kind of everyday language. So I think there is this kind of climate change, but also climate for those kind of undertakings. So teachers, English teachers can't be, can't be sitting idle. And decision makers, and when I talk about decision makers, I think about political decision makers, but also educational decision makers. We need those kind of topics.
And if schools and institutions should somehow reflect the society in which they're based, it would seem very odd to ignore those issues. It would be very strange to not talk about those in language classes.
Yes, absolutely. I think going from, you know, this global topic in a course book into this local theme connected with what is going on in my village, in my town, in my city, in my country, that's something really precious.
Fantastic. Thank you, Alexandra. I think that was great.
The Climate Connection.